Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Mostly Horror early and ad-free on Amazon Music.
Download the app today.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to Mostly Horror Movie Night.
Mostly.
I am Steve.
And I am Sean.
And this is the first interview that we have, well, first episode. Jesus.
The episode. This is our first episode.
This is the first episode with an interview of 2022. We're very excited for it. We are joined by Nikki Lindroth von Barr, who is one of the directors of one of the segments of The House. The House is a stop motion horror-ish anthology that comes out on January 14th. So by the time this episode is out, The House will already be out. Sean and I can both attest.
Guys.
Yeah, I was gonna say we can both attest to it being very well made. It's an anthology. There's three different stories, which Nikki will go into in our interview, but three different stories that all have different themes and are all fantastic in their own way. So that conversation with Nikki is great and will be in a couple minutes. But first, Sean has a little addendum to talk about.
Oh, we're going to do that first?
Yeah. Because we did explain why you're doing this edition.
Right. All right. Now. So I fucked up is what happened. Our last episode, Curse Films, we talked about The Exorcist and The Omen. And I was breaking down, you know, the weird things that happen on set. And I swear to, I had it written down. I didn't talk about the biggest thing that happened during, well, not like during, but the one of the biggest aspects of The Exorcist. I re-listened to the episode and was like, oh shit, I didn't say that at all. But so, Steve, did you know that one of the actors on The Exorcist was a murderer?
No.
Yeah, dude. How did I not bring that up? I talked about all this other shit, but I didn't tell you about this. Okay. So
was it murder?
He committed murder. Where do I begin? So basically, there is a scene early on into the movie where, after Reagan has been acting pretty strange, they take her to the hospital and they have a bunch of tests run on her immediately. Mm-hmm. And for that scene, like, it shows her doing like a bunch, getting x-rays done and all this sort of stuff. For that scene, they just went to an actual, what? Why are you making that face?
I've heard this. All right.
Yeah, you have?
Yeah. It just clicks now. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So they went to an actual like hospital and like radiology sort of center. I think that the like head of radiology or something was friends with the executive producer. There was a connection there. Either way, it doesn't matter. But they were just like, hey, do you mind just being the people? Like, we don't want to hire people that don't know what they're doing. Like, we would, yeah, we would just rather like, yeah, well, we would, you know, rather just come in, use the actual locations with people, you know, and the actual instruments with people that actually know how to use them. And so the guy was like, yeah, of course, like, you know, being in a movie sounds cool. And yeah, they literally, like, the film crew just showed up and they used, you know, this lead of radiology. I think that's what it was. But like, yeah, technician. And then all of his, like, all the people that worked under him.
Okay.
And one of those people was a man named Paul Bateson. And you can see him in the movie. I can think of his face right now. I don't even think he has a line. If he does, it's just like a quick line. But Paul Bateson, I think like 4 years after the Exorcist, it was in 77. Paul Bateson murdered a man by the name of Addison Verrill. Addison Verrill was found it happened here in New York. He was found in the, I think he was found in the Greenwich Village area, which you've been here longer.
Greenwich Village. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Wow. I saw a T there, but you said it's where?
It's in like where NYU is, Washington Square Park.
Oh, okay.
That's Greenwich Village. Yeah.
But yeah, he was found beaten and stabbed, in that area. And yep. And so he was a known gay man. And this is supposed, I guess there was like a prevalent gay community here.
Yeah.
And so they didn't really, especially in the '70s, they didn't really put a lot of work into, you know, finding justice for this man, for Addison. So, the newspapers weren't really talking about it. So a man, one second, I will find it. A man named Arthur Bell, a journalist for the Village Voice, decided to, well, like, fuck that. I'm going to make sure, you know, I'm going to put some pressure on this. So he wrote an article, basically talking about how it's bullshit that gay men and oppressed people of the time just weren't getting the same, traction and stuff. And he was called by someone claiming to be the killer. And the call, went something along the lines of, you know, I killed Addison. Look, I like your story and your writing, but I'm not a psychopath. And then he goes on to basically explain that, you know, Paul and Addison had a sexual encounter interaction. Mm-hmm. And he said Addison hadn't been reciprocal. It wasn't just the sex act itself that wasn't reciprocal. It was the soul act too. I wanted a lasting thing, something that would go beyond sex into friendship, a lover, or marriage. And then he said, I decided to do something I've never done before. And that's when he went into the kitchen, found a frying pan, knocked Addison over the head, and then went into a drawer at the right hand side of the kitchen, removed a knife and stuck it into Addison's chest, plunged it too high. It should have stuck a bit more towards the center left. Just like a really weird phone call, you know, like clearly, I don't know. Yeah. I always think it's really interesting when they call after, but yeah, I just don't know how I didn't talk about this murder.
That's weird.
They think he might've killed other people as well. Yeah, they were never able to tie him to it.
It looks like he's still alive. He's 81 years old.
He was released on parole.
Yeah, after 24 years and 3 months. He also is in, he's played by someone in Mindhunter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
We'll have to go through. Oh, you know what? Is this a different Mindhunter? No, this is the same Mindhunter. Yeah. He's played by someone in the second season of Mindhunter.
They must not have talked about The Exorcist at all, because I don't remember that.
It must be a quick thing or something.
Yeah.
When he's like profiling a bunch of different people. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I did. Mm-hmm. I knew that fact in like my brain somewhere, but I had completely forgotten about it. And I'm glad that you brought it up.
Also, another quick one. You had said, didn't, you know, lightning strike a church?
Yeah.
That was with The Exorcist. It was at one of the Rome like premieres. So I wasn't sure, but I was like, I think that might be Poltergeist, but no, it was The Exorcist.
It was The Exorcist.
And yeah, I mean, listen, I am not eventually we will get good. I won't say eventually, we will get better at our presentation of information. That's not exactly our normal show, and I'm not that guy. But listen, that's not why you're here. You're here for the for a more.
You're here for the tone of our voice.
Zip zap zop, dude. We're improvising. All right. So yeah.
But what else? So you missed the thing in The Exorcist, yeah. Which is really interesting. And I'm going to throw on Mindhunter right after this and find out what episode it's in.
I kind of just want to rewatch all of Mindhunter now.
How are you feeling? You got boosted.
Oh yeah, dude. So, all right. So I got boosted up, man.
You sound like you're better than you have been.
Yeah. Oh, I feel so much better today. But it kicked my ass. The first two shots, you know, were because I did the Modernas. The first two, I had some arm pain, some pretty intense arm pain. I won't lie, but nothing that you couldn't deal with. Like, it was fine. Yeah. It was just a discomfort. With the first shot, it was kind of immediate. But then it went away, and I didn't really have any other side effects. So the second shot, it was really weird because I got like a huge knot in my arm very quickly, but pain didn't come till hours later. But it literally looked like I had a golf ball in my arm. And then later in the day, I had some achiness, but was mainly fine. This shot hurt. It didn't start hurting for a couple hours, but then my arm really, really, really got sore. My arm is still sore. Like, if I go to pick stuff up, like up here, like, you know what I mean? Like, if I'm doing this, yeah, it hurts. But before I could
really lift it at all. You're doing a movement you don't normally do.
Yeah. Yeah. Lifting. Well, I mean, like, okay. Well, so if you see like my bed, when I'm sitting there watching TV in my bed, I have like a coaster thingy on the wall, and I grab my drink from there a lot. So I'll just be watching, and it's normal. Like, this was very painful. This like that reaching back motion. No one can see what the fuck I'm talking about. But dude, I got, and we talked about this a bit, but I got terrible body aches. It felt like I had a really intense fever, but with no, I didn't, my body wasn't hot. I took my temperature at one point and I had like a 99, you know, so just kind of under normal fever area, a little bit warmer than where I usually hang out, but fine. But yeah, dude, I was just exhausted. My arm hurt and all of my bones hurt. Like, my fingers hurt, my knees hurt, my back, like every, all, if my body felt like one big bruise. But again, I hope that all of our listeners are vaxxed and educated and reasonable, logical people. But for anyone that is having any nerves about the vaccine in general or the boosters, just so you know, that is completely normal. That is what your body does when it is producing antibodies. Your bones hurt because your bone marrow is kicking out white blood cells and antibodies. That is what is happening. It's not weird. And I'm fine now. My arm's a little sore. I had, you know, a rough day and a half. Yeah. I'm fine. And also, you will be fine.
I had COVID and it was not bad because I am vaccinated.
Yeah. And you still didn't have a great time.
Yeah. It was still, but, you know, it still, you know, made me not work for a week.
Right. So, imagine how much worse it would have been had you not been vaxxed. So
exactly. But yeah, we, you know, like we said, we have a very good interview with Nikki Lindroth von Barr. I'm very sad. I'm not sad. So my girlfriend Sydney and I are going on a trip in a couple of days. We'll be back, I guess, by the time this episode's out. But we're going to Savannah, Georgia. And it's going to be fun because it's a spooky place. And we're going to do a spooky little tour.
Like a ghost tour, right?
Yeah, it's a trolley tour, and it talks about like all the true crime stuff that's happened there and all the quote unquote haunted stuff that's happened there. So like, I'm excited. I've driven through Atlanta, but never really been to Savannah at all. Mm-hmm. Which is exciting, but Scream comes out on Friday and I can't go see it while on vacation.
Right.
So we'll have to see it as soon as I get back.
Yeah,
Somehow, if I'm able to see it on vacation, I'll tell you so you can go see it.
Yeah, you definitely let me know.
Yeah, that way we're not on like a different, you know, time frame. Right. But I'm so excited for Scream. I can't. Yeah. Everyone knows I'm excited, but I'm so excited for Scream. And that comes out. It'll be out by the time this episode's out, which is very exciting.
Gang shit.
Exactly. But yeah, we have a fun interview with Nikki. Sean, do you have any last thoughts about the interview before we hop into it?
No, it was, you know, it was great to talk to Nikki. Everybody needs to watch The House. It's, you know, a beautiful movie. Unfortunately, you know, with the nature of having something just come out, Nikki is very busy. So we only got to talk to her for a little bit, and I could have asked her questions all day. Luckily, she was very energetic and had a lot to say. So it's a packed interview that could have, you know, we could bring her back time and time again.
Yeah,
just to talk about you know, her love for the art form and even The House. Like we could break down that movie with her.
Yeah,
but you know, here's a little taste of a great conversation with her. So,
yep. And I should mention we have a game this week. If you missed games
are back.
To the game. Games are back. Yep. But yeah, we will get you guys over to our interview with Nikki Lindroth von Bahr. Hope you guys enjoy.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we are joined today by Nikki Lindroth von Bahr. Nikki is an artist and animation director based in Stockholm. Her award-winning short films, Something to Remember, The Burden, Bathhouse, and Tord and Tord have been screened at festivals like Cannes, Toronto, and Sundance. Her newest work is the second chapter of The House, a new animated anthology on Netflix containing work from 4 different stop-motion directors. Nikki, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stoked to have you here.
We were just talking about how you're doing a lot of press for this new, you know, The House comes out in a couple days here. Are you doing a lot of different things for it? Like, have you been talking about the work a lot?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're still quite early on, but I feel like it's a sort of a tsunami coming in, which is lovely. It's just that it's nice to, I mean, once you're kind of warmed up with these things, it gets easier. But it's like, especially when English is not your first language, it's a bit like you just feel like a sort of 10-year-old trying to explain things. But you're really smarter within. You know, it's a bit frustrating from time to time.
I'm sure it'll come across way better than you're thinking. But I
your English sounds great. So
yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. That's what I was fishing for.
There you go. So for people who don't know or may just be hearing about The House for the first time, could you just give like a little description of the film itself and then your short within it?
Yeah, well, The House is an anthology consisting of 3 different chapters that's directed by different directors. So it's Mark and Emma, Mark James Rolls and Emma DeSweff that's directing the first chapter, and I'm directing the second one, and Paloma Baeza is directing the third one. And so we're all quite like experienced stop motion director since before. Mm-hmm. And both Mark and Emma and Paloma has really been, you know, my sort of idols since earlier. I mean, like I really admire their work. So it was really, I mean, like a huge honor, but also a bit terrifying to be honest, you know, like when starting this whole thing, just like, oh my God, this is like being in this like so talented, you know, bunch, like how will I look, you know, but it's just been amazing. So the story is the theme is an actual house that and the people who's lived in it for in different different decades, or how you say it. So like the first story is in the past, and my story is in the present, and Paloma's story is story three is like in a kind of near future, I'd say.
Yeah.
Dystopian future. And everything is obviously made in stop motion animation, so we share the team and many of the creatives behind, you know, different parts of the show. And well, it's just been a complete unique experience. It's so nice to be able to make something that has this, I mean, that's this, you know, like we've been working so much on it, like on the stories and on the scripts, and also getting this possibility to work with the best people in the world when it comes to like puppet manufacturing and sets and animation. I mean, like where I come from, it's like I've been spending my time in, you know, a basement sort of folding my own tiny milk boxes, you know, for years and years. And all of a sudden you have like a real team, you know, and real professional people. You don't need to invent the wheel yourself constantly. Right. And it's just been fantastic. But sorry, my story, it takes place in current time, and it's about, I was quite inspired by this old apartment thrillers like The Tenant and Repulsion and also David Lynch, and I wanted to make something some sort of twisted and claustrophobic, like almost chamber drama, but with also this contemporary overheated real estate market as a backdrop, because like what, like in Stockholm and everywhere, obviously it's just you can hardly like walk the sidewalks here, because everyone is, you know, tearing out their kitchen to make a new one and renovating their apartments, and everyone is like so obsessed with the prestige and the status marker as in having a nice place, and also like the very sort of basic need of having a place to live has all of a sudden become like a class marker, you know, and that's just so absurd.
Like a status symbol. Yeah.
Yeah, status symbol, exactly. And my film is about a developer that has just bought a very sort of old and worn down house, known from the first chapter. And he's about to renovate it and sell it to a much higher price. So he's like renovating it to look like something that, you know, rich people want, you know, like a very sort of fun to do a lot of like research on like Kylie Jenner's mansion and this kind of like soulless weird like nouveau riche environments. But he's very sort of pressured, like the bank is on him, it's a very sort of financially precious situation to begin with, and on top of everything it also turns out that this house is just full of insects that has lived there before, obviously. And so like apart from him being forced into renovating himself the final pieces before the big house viewing, he's also forced to like exterminate like millions of insects, so it's that's just a huge pressure. And when the viewing is actually happening, the only two people that seems to be like genuinely interested in the house are two characters that are like very similar to these insects, but in his size, and they sort of like mention that they have lived there before, and that they're very like interested in the materials in the walls and just being very strange. And this becomes like a weird sort of deranged journey into inner and outer madness to this poor guy.
You definitely take us on a complete journey there. So Steve, you were gonna
I was gonna say Sean and I have both seen the house, and yours specifically has, I mean, they're all three of the shorts of the films are phenomenal, and yours specifically has this certain feel to it of creepiness and of, you know, of making this, they all make these interesting statements, and yours makes this very interesting statement about kind of the housing market. And like you said, like status symbols and that sort of stuff, that's, it's very interesting to look at delivered the way that you delivered it.
Thank you.
Which is, it's great.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
It's so delightfully strange and creepy. And those two characters that you're talking about that show up that are very similar to the bugs and stuff that you're showing are two of my favorite characters that I've seen in recent. Like there's just something so unsettling about them.
Totally unsettling.
Yeah. But yeah, you talked about getting to work with people that you've admired for a long time and wondering if, you know, kind of having that nervous, like, I'm hanging with these people and wondering if I could hold my own on it. And I think that you did so very, very well.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. But so your segment, as well as chapter one specifically, have some pretty dark themes that you touch on, and sort of a dark aesthetic that you're applying to it. So with this being a horror show, I have to ask, do you consider yourself much of a horror fan? And yes. If so, what are your sort of like beginnings with the genre?
Well, I actually am. I'm very much a horror fan. I think a lot more than many of my friends, to my big disappointment. It's very much like, who am I taking to this like horror film? Like,
we at get
the
it.
Cinema? Like,
yeah. We understand.
Well, I am, and I've been thinking a lot about that because it's I've been thinking about why I do appreciate horror. I mean, I'm not necessarily into the sort of, you know, people being slaughtered and blood everywhere, like not that kind of, but like psychological horror and supernatural horror. I think it's so fascinating to me, and I've been thinking a lot about the my dog is wait, yeah,
you're okay,
thank you. Sorry guys,
you're okay.
My dog was about horror, we've been invaded by, which is also a bit ironic, but like here in my studio, we've been invaded by rats lately, and we have like rat cage, like this sort of rat traps everywhere. My dog was just approaching a rat trap. Sorry. Okay, so
that seems fitting.
About horror. Yeah. Yes, that's it's very interesting when you've seen the house. Like it's very much that's what's happening in the film. But sorry. I've just been thinking about like why are certain people like very sort of fascinated by and drawn to this genre and why are some not, and I think for me it's quite a lot about like I've been dealing with quite a lot of like anxiety and the sort of fear of, you know, catastrophes and like sort of dystopian futures, like it feels like that has been like a huge sort of weight on my shoulders in my entire life. And just and I think maybe because horror is a way of like dealing with these feelings, but in a totally like controlled way. That's just what I've kind of been. That's the only sort of thing I've been. I don't know, that kind of makes sense to me, but it's also just, I just think it's, I also think that it's so like, so such a cool feeling to really feel completely unsettled, like, and like inside a different world. And that's, you know, that it's so like anything could happen and it kind of does in a bad way, you know, and I've always been drawn to like, I love, you know, I love the films where that like who, like which are dark for real, you know, that it's not just like maybe not necessarily those like Scream movies or when it's just sort of entertaining kind of you know, entertaining kind of violence or whatever, but like for example Hereditary, I think it's just such a beautiful combination of like horror but also like real horror, like, you know, a real sort of a life that, like, because you do tend to, like, there are catastrophes in real life as well, and yes. You know, horrible things do happen. I think it's kind of nice not to be completely distant to those things. I mean, I love that film that came out like maybe 1 or 2 years ago on Netflix, actually. I think like this film called His House, that's about like an asylum seeking family that like both sort of gets haunted by their past, like being mm-hmm. forced to make like horrible decisions in war, like trying to flee from war, but also gets like haunted by real ghosts where they are ending up, you know, in
yeah.
I think it's in the UK. I think it's just it's interesting when you kind of mix up those sort of very unreal this unreal horror with real horrors, like, because that's just yeah. so
yeah,
you know, it's so powerful. Yeah,
100%. It's a very, the horror genre is a very populated genre, and there's bits of things for everybody. You know, there's more playful, lighthearted. I don't want to use this term. It's just all I can think of in the moment, but like shallow, playful horror. And then there's stuff that's really yes. like, you know, touching on much more realistic
yes.
stuff that hits a lot closer to home in a more intense way. And yeah, you talked about we've talked about this on the show before, but horror movies are great for people that, you know, suffer with anxiety and fears and stuff. I was a very scared kid, and it gives you a safe space to kind of confront your fears. And then I think over time you find things delightfully creepy, you know, like there's something, it's almost like taking power over your fears and stuff, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean,
Do you think you were talking about how, you know, it has the realistic aspect to it while also being unsettling and having those other, you know, areas in terms of horror that you enjoy? Do you think you find that in your own work, or that like lends itself to the work that you make? Because, you know, your chapter in The House specifically, like you're confronting or talking about a very specific thing, but you're using, or in all your work, you use animals as, you know, the centerpieces, as opposed to, you know, humans, stop motion humans, or models or puppets or whatever it may be. Or like, you know, the delivery in some of your other work is like kind of deadpan, and it gives that unsettling feel, but you're still tackling a real thing. Do you think those are kind of the same with like horror films and what you're creating?
Yeah, well, I'd like to think so, at least. I mean, I've always been very interested in, like, you know, real issues in like society and politics and like the, you know, just fucked up world we're living right. in, you know, like I think it's those themes are really important for me to include, because it would just feel so weird otherwise. But, and I mean, like, apart from my characters being animals, I always aim to go as real as possible, you know, like with the, you know, with the actual, well, not necessarily like rats dancing in a,
right.
in a hamburger restaurant or you know, but it's still like, I think that the core should really be something that's real, and that's like a you know, a real issue, or like a real, you know, something that's, yeah, you know, that's real to all of us. And for me, using, in a weird way, I think for me, using animal characters instead of humans, I think that almost like brings us closer to the characters. I think, like, for me, I never really found like a way of portraying animals as puppets in a sort of, I think you get more distant than close to those characters. I mean, like, yeah, it's some kind of not like unheimlich, what am I saying, like, you know, it's like too close to home, but still not, you know, it's still so unreal. And then you just back off. Or, I mean, at least I do. So I think, like, using animals, I think that's my way of trying to make all of us really feel that this character could be me. And I mean, I always start with a certain, like, situation or a, a house, for example, or an atmosphere instead of the actual character. I mean, to me, the character is just someone. It could be you or me. Like, it's just someone that's been put within a certain situation that we need to deal with, basically. So, so if that's, I think it's easier to maybe connect with a mouse than a human. I don't know.
I kind of get what you mean. Yeah. It also,
No, no, but I mean, I think it's just, and also, I mean, obviously it adds some silliness to it as well, which I kind of enjoy, because like sometimes you do need a little bit silliness to like, because that's also life, you know, like it is absurd and sad and horrible, but also, you know, a bit silly, you know, and we're all just like, aren't we all just animals in the end as well? Like trying to just like put on some stupid outfits and you know, accessories and
absolutely. I couldn't help but wonder if there, I guess it's going to be, I'm going to kind of throw a couple things at you, so I apologize, but I couldn't help but wonder if you specifically chose to have your main character be a rat because of like almost like a parallel with the insect infestation and sort of how your story goes. I don't want to give too many spoilers away, but I also want to, you know, we're obviously talking about horror, but I want you to kind of, if you would be so kind, to talk about the stop motion world too, and what goes into making a stop motion movie, you know, from developing puppets and things like that.
Yeah, well, I think when it comes to the choice of animal in this chapter, I think you're definitely right. I really wanted to, because that's also like in this film, I'm kind of using animals in very sort of different on different levels, or like in sort of a meta kind of situation, because like we do have like real insects, and we have the developer who's like a person, but he's also a mouse, and then we have the odd couple that are like some kind of hybrid between these insects and mice and people. that was a bit of a challenge, definitely, but I think I had this idea about like all these characters just in the end being pests, or like that people consider as pests, you know, like it's rodents and it's insects. And at the end, also this developer also just kind of embraces his animal self, and which is like a kind of a blessing for him to just finally let it all go. And I think I kind of enjoyed that, like him just sort of embracing his true self, really.
Yeah, that devolving.
But and I mean, when it comes to working with stop motion, I think, I mean, I come from myself, I mean, like I started studying prop making to begin with, like many, many years ago, but I've always been very sort of tactile, and I love material, and I love to build things myself. So, I mean, like in my previous films, I built all the, you know, puppets and parts of the sets, and, you know, like almost everything. So it's... that's been very important for me to be very sort of hands-on with this, but now, like working with this kind of upscaled production, it was a bit nervous to do that, because especially because of COVID, we worked with Mackinnon and Saunders in Manchester in the UK, and I'm Stockholm based, and I was obviously meant to go a lot back and forth and stay in Manchester for quite a long time during the manufacturing and during the shoot and everything, but then because of COVID we needed to just stay at home for much longer. I was able to be a couple of months in Manchester during the shoot, but like when it came to just making and designing, I designed most of the puppets, but it's I couldn't even be in the workshop, you know, I couldn't even like be there and like feel the fur or whatever, you know, like I just needed to trust these people. But it was like it's just been the most amazing experience, actually, because like working with this, like they're you know, literally like the best in the world at what they're doing. And they're also, apart from that, they're also like, this team is also just so, they really sort of listen in to your ideas about like, and especially like in my film, you know, since there are like, yeah, you know, like mouse looking insects and insect looking is, you know, like it's not super clear. And I mean, right. Like you did need to work quite a lot with both, like with the animation as well, with like the appearance of the characters, like how they move, how they talk, what they look like and everything. You need to sort of stay on, like keep a certain balance in everything. And no, I was just so happily surprised that it worked out so well. And that's,
yeah.
I mean, everything is just beyond what I could ever sort of imagine. It just mm-hmm. looks amazing to me and exactly the way I want it.
Yeah.
So that's nice. Nice for my sort of control freakish side, you know.
It's got to be. We talked about this with a lot of creatives and specifically directors. Collaboration is just such, you know, collaboration is one of the reasons that people get into creating and art in general, because yeah. collaborating is such yeah. a great thing, but also mm-hmm. it's really difficult. So it's great yeah. that you
so
have
difficult.
Great yeah. that you have this final result of something that you know, it being what you wanted, you know. That's
yeah crazy. Yeah yeah no I mean I was a bit like expecting that, you know, this, you know, I just need to stay open to that this might not be exactly the way I, you know, like this could be a bit different to yeah. what I, but it's yeah, but it's like, oh yeah, it was such a relief that it's just
yeah,
just looks so much better that I could never do it. Yes. So
yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Oh yeah, thank you. It's yeah. so good. So one final thing that we wanted to talk about, you know, you've said and we said earlier that you're based out of Stockholm. So in the US, we don't have, you know, America, I feel like, is behind in terms of animation. Like I feel like we're slowly starting to get there with popularizing, or I should say specifically adult animation. You know, I feel like there's a lot of other countries in the world that have adult animation as a type of entertainment. But for us, we have, you know, it's mostly made for kids. Like the house is, yeah, I feel like something that's going to be different because it's adult animation.
Yeah.
And also a lot of the animated stuff that you see here that's stop motion, I feel like has that creepy feel to it, or it's a little bit darker when it's made.
Yeah.
So for instance, Laika is a huge studio, you know, they've made all these huge movies. And so I'm curious your thoughts on A, the popularization of stop motion animation, and also just adult animation in general. Like, is it something that you see more in Europe? Or is it something that's just starting to like kind of take hold everywhere?
Well, I do. I always feel a little bit embarrassed by this question because it sort of exposes me as not being the nerd that maybe I'm expected to be within animation. I think, I mean, I don't feel that I have. But to me, it's a bit like that. People sort of have asked me this question through the year. Like, do you think that stop motion has, like, what about now, like when the stop motion is booming, and what about now? Like, to me, it's just not, I don't see that much. Well, I mean, it's stop motion is still quite rare, I mean, compared to other kinds of animation, obviously, because it's just so, you know, horribly complicated and takes so much time and so much money. I mean, it's really not like, it's not easy. Although I think it's like a really sort of beautiful technique, but it's complicated. But I just feel that I'm not that up to date with stuff. I mean, I love films. I love to watch films, and that's one reason for me to start working with stop motion. But like, I started working with stop motion because I love to sort of build my own puppets and sets and create my own worlds, but I also wanted to combine the love I have for film and storytelling, and you know, so I come much more from that side of it, rather than just being like super well informed about animation. but I mean, I do think that what I can say is like it's different in different countries in Europe, definitely. But I mean, compared to, I mean, I think like France, for example, have like a huge, what do you say? Like they have a very sort of rich culture within animation that is not for kids, that is more for adults, and a lot of other countries around as well, and a lot bigger sort of budgets in general, and you know, right. these things. But and in Sweden, it's I mean, it's we don't like it's we hardly don't have any animation at all, and definitely not any sort of adult animation. So I feel quite like we're a very sort of tiny bunch of people working with this at this moment here. So it's there's not like a community, and I think like for me, like just screening my films in Sweden, it's mm-hmm. quite interesting because people tend to be much more like we're very close to like children's culture when it comes to animation. So like mm-hmm. when I screened my first film, for example, Tord and Tord, at a cinema here in Sweden or like in Stockholm, people were just you know, laughing like crazy because it's like, oh, it's a rabbit with a sweater and he's speaking and it's a lot of fun, you know.
Yeah.
Why, you know, but like and like, which is okay. I mean, like it is a quite, I mean, the film is quite fun, but it's also quite dark, you know, and it's about sort of mental illness and stuff like that. But and then when I screened the same film in Annecy, which is like one of the biggest animation festivals in France, like a couple of months later, like the entire audience was just like dead quiet, and like someone was like laughing at one point and someone else was just like
yeah.
hushing, and they came up to me and were like, yeah, it's very Kafka. So it's a huge difference when it like how people interpret these things.
Yeah.
Like even within Europe, even though I think there are like countries in Europe that are mm-hmm. much better at it.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I could say.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, it frustrates me here as a lover of horror and of animation that here in the US it tends to either be for kids or it's very like kind of raunchy, just like comedy adult animation. Yeah. I would love to see, especially stop motion, but animation in general explored in a more adult horror fashion. I think there's a lot of things that could touch on that, but we know that you are pressed
with the house.
Well, yeah, well, no, exactly. It's we get it. I'm not saying it never happens. It's I just would love to see it more. I think of things like
Dark but Crystal me too.
Yeah,
it's still rare. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But we know that you are clearly very busy with the release of House, and you're going to have to go soon. But we wanted to ask about anything that you've been watching recently or inspired by that you would like to share with our listeners that maybe they should check out.
Yes, that's a good question. I think, I mean, I just feel so like, I like, you know, I have a 3-year-old daughter and I have like, so it's like, I have so little time to watch things these days. But I mean, to me, obviously, like, I think that all of us are talking right now about it's obviously, one second, sorry. Succession. Oh. It was just like obsession. Yes. Obsession. No, not Succession.
Steve's been watching that.
Yeah, yeah, I just think it's like the most interesting and intelligent thing I've ever seen on television. And I'm not the only one saying this, but I just think it's so it's genius, really.
It's so good. I actually work on Succession slightly, so it's cool to hear. I work in post-production, so I work in the post-production aspect of it, but that's cool. Succession's amazing. I agree with you. It's so good.
Yeah. I just think that like it would be my biggest wish to like do something like that, but you know, within animation, that would be so much fun. But I mean, like I think as well, if people haven't watched His House at Netflix, I think that was also like an amazing horror film. Also, I think I reread The Woman in Black, this 60s novel, like horror novel by Susan Hill, that I also felt was like, this really works still. Maybe that would be a good recommendation.
I didn't even know that was a book. I saw the movie Woman in Black and didn't love it.
No. It's not a great movie. Skip the movie and just read the book. It's very much sort of a gothic kind of old fashioned ghost story, but it's not that much is happening, but it's still like, I get, you know, scared just listening to it during daytime, like walking the street. It's just so like eerie. It's amazing. Yeah. So Susan Hill's Woman in Black. Just,
absolutely.
Well, Nikki, we appreciate you being on Mostly Horror Movie Night. We are so excited for The House. Like I said, Sean and I have seen it, and we're excited for everyone else to get to see it. Thank you again for being on the show, and we're excited for whatever's coming next.
Yeah,
thanks so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Thank you.
Take care.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Speaking of dodgeball, we're back with another game. We are joined by our friend Chelsea for this one. We haven't done a game in, I don't even remember when the last time our game was.
I could not tell
you. It feels like it was last year.
It was last year,
it was a joke.
we did a something with Ash and Elena on an episode. Right? We did like a kind of a game with them. That's the last one I remember doing, like in my room here.
Yeah. I don't remember
what it was.
I don't either. Okay. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I think we just caught up with them, but I don't think we played a game, did we?
We totally played a game of some sort. It'll come to me. What was the game that Chelsea played with us before to remind the folks?
The last thing I did was Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh yes, yeah, you played the game of Rotten
Tomatoes. But I did something before that too.
Yep, we did the build a zombie dream team, survivor team out of TV characters.
Yeah,
yeah.
But, yeah, because you put Hannibal on your team. I remember that specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Chelsea
BS. No. But for this one, because this episode is about The House, with our interview with Nikki Lindroth von Barr, we are choosing our top movie or TV houses that you would want to live in. And that's it. I don't really know. Chelsea, you can go first. Sean, do you want to either you go first this time or either you go second this time or
I don't care. You can place me wherever you want, man.
All right, you're gonna go third and we're just gonna deal with the consequences. We're picking our top five movie or TV houses that you would want to live in. Obviously, you know, show your work, explain the case, and see how the others react and let's see what we get. Chelsea, what is the first number one movie or TV house you would want to live in?
My number one pick is going to be the house from Narnia with the stipulation that the wardrobe is included.
Fair. Ooh, that's a good pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a cool house.
Yeah, it's cool enough house without the wardrobe, but I feel like that's a stationary wardrobe.
Yeah.
It seems like that's just part of of what belongs in the house. Damn. So guessing that's going to come with it.
Fair. Yeah. As is. Well, you're taking the house
yeah,
as
the house
is.
As is. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that that's fair.
I didn't approach this house thing thinking about like the additionals that you get. I feel I think I just thought, damn,
that
I
may have
up.
Been a mistake, sir.
We'll see what happens.
It sounds like maybe you weren't thinking correctly.
Chelsea, you just want Tumnus to be able to come in into your room at night and whisper sweet nothings.
I mean, that's not part of it. I will say when I was telling my boyfriend that was a pick I had, and he had said, well, you know, Narnia is like an allegory for Christianity, which I actually didn't know that those stories were that, because I'm not,
oh, really?
You know, yeah, I'm not crazy familiar, but he did say that's that. Fair. But that's not what would be happening if I was living in that house. It would no longer be an allegory for Christianity. We'd be most dangerous gaming it with Aslan. I would be like doing drugs with Mr. Tumnus. Like it would be a nightmare universe as soon as I stepped in.
Amazing.
Yeah, yes, that's what I'm thinking.
C.S. Lewis is very Jesus-y.
Yeah, but I mean, there's tons of things that are, you know, inspired by Christianity and even written by like more aggressive, yeah, like Christian people that are great. Like the Narnia books are great. But yeah, the Golden Compass series, what's that called? Like the actual name of that series?
I don't know what the series is called.
Dark Fantasy or something. Is Dark Materials.
Is that the Golden Compass? Yes. I didn't fucking know that.
That's
no
what that
way.
Franchise is called. Yes. That was a secular response to the Narnia series. Hmm. I remember when the movie came out, my grandfather's like a part of the Masons, like the Freemasons, and they, I guess, fed him a whole line about how this Golden Compass series, just don't let your children watch it and blah, 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 blah. And they were, and you know, he had never really, like, I watched Harry Potter and stuff and whatever, but for whatever reason, this movie and South Park, he got really weird about for a second.
That's so strange. I mean, but I guess then, that makes sense, South Park, but
a little bit, but I wasn't right. Seven. I don't know.
Narnia is a great choice. Or not Narnia, but the house in Narnia, yeah. The house that contains the wardrobe that gets you to Narnia. I'm gonna have to figure out how to, I'll figure it out. All right. My number one pick, Sean, are you ready for me to take one off of your board?
I already know what it is.
It's probably not the one that you're thinking of. But my number one pick is the house from Smart House.
Oh, you didn't take it, but holy shit.
I didn't even think of that.
I'm proud of you for that one. That was a good pick. That was an unexpected pick.
So it was the first one that I thought of. Because I was legitimately just thinking about like houses that are more than just, you know, houses that do things themselves. And you know, for anyone that doesn't know what Smart House is, it's an old Disney Channel original where a kid's mom dies and he like goes into a raffle or something to win this smart home. And him and his family, his sister and dad, I think is all that was with him, move into the smart home. And basically it has this automated system. It's like a big electronic computer operated house. And he reprograms it to become his mom, basically. Mm-hmm. So it could be called Mom House, but the house can do a lot of cool things. I specifically remember it like scares the shit out of this bully at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But it's a house that can do whatever you want, basically.
Yeah.
And can be programmed to do whatever you want.
Did you say that was a Disney Channel original?
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. Okay. No, I just didn't remember if I heard you say it. That movie's so good. And it's got the voice of Leela in it. Like, that's
the voice of Leela?
That dude, mom is Leela.
Oh, no, I haven't watched Smart House and sign. We need
Let's
to rewatch Smart House.
Right after
do you know what
done.
I found out though when I was like looking these things up as I was putting them on my list? That movie's directed by LeVar Burton.
What?
Yeah. Fucking
refresher.
Fucking LeVar Reading Rainbow, LeVar Burton.
What?
Yeah.
Dude, butterflies in the sky. That's insane, dude. Yeah.
He hasn't done a lot of directing. He did like a Tiger Woods like documentary biopic thing and this. So
okay, range, we get
wild.
It
yeah for yeah. real but yeah so I Sean I thought they would totally be on your list. I'm glad I didn't steal any of those now. Yeah. So that makes me happy. All right, what's your first one, Sean?
I'm torn on. Okay, so first off, do you think it's in good taste to pick houses from the same universe, like for two different picks?
Yeah,
as long as they're two different reasons. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, my first pick is going to be the Weasley's house from Harry Potter.
That's a good choice.
Yes, I have just always been obsessed with this idea, which is really strange, but of a house that's like taller than it is wide, and but isn't a castle and is super like kind of Tim Burton-y, like off its, like, you know, crooked. Crooked, and it's just their house is so filled with stuff everywhere, and it totally feels like a witch's house and really homey in that family vibe.
Yeah, homey is definitely the word I would use.
Yes, and it's just out in the middle of kind of fucking nowhere, and I don't know.
It has a fireplace that you can use flu powder in.
Exactly.
It has hopefully they leave some behind when they
move out.
I can go to Diagon Alley.
Diagon Alley. Yeah, exactly.
Did you say Diagon Alley? But yeah. So the Weasley's house. Yep.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Damn,
I don't have a bit about it. It's just a good pick.
No, it is. Yeah, a good pick. No, you're right. I'm trying to think of the other house that you would want to choose.
Now it's funny because I don't think you can guess.
I can't because I don't have anything from the Harry Potter universe.
I don't even think Chelsea could guess.
All right.
I think it's obscure. Oh. I think it's obscure. I think it's not what you'd be thinking.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Also might not use it. It's. I'm going to keep it as a backup.
Okay.
All right, Chelsea. What is your second choice?
I think my second choice would be SpongeBob's house.
Motherfucker.
Really?
Yeah.
We went in different directions.
Well, I was looking when I was thinking about his house, like obviously first thought pineapple, good start. I was looking it up to see like what's the layout of that bitch, because we know like it's always very confusing. It feels like he's always got every room that he needs. Like whatever is happening in the house, he's got the room. And you can find like a layout of his home, like a description. There's three floors. Obviously he's got the rooftop like situation going on, which I really enjoy. I like the idea that it's protected, you know, like the top of the pineapple kind of keeps you like enclosed, but you could still bathe up there and hang out. Privacy. He's got a library in there. I like his decor. I think he's got a fun little style. Yeah, I think it would be a nice little place to live.
Also, location, you know.
Yeah.
It's in like a nice area, mm-hmm. you know, Bikini Bottoms. It's not rock bottom, you know. He lives not in a rock nice bottom. Area.
Fairly That's close right. to Lagoon.
Yep.
We've seen throw crazy parties in it too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, fucking ragers, dude.
Yeah.
I always wondered if it ever smelled in there, though. But I guess that the water situation might deal with it. Just like a rotting pineapple. I don't know, man. I was like, he must have really hollowed this out. Is it just the shell? Was he able to? I need to see the layout plans for like the structure of the building. But for the most part, I you know, clearly it's working. I'm just curious.
Yeah, it's worked for over 20 years now. So it can't be rotting that bad.
No, right.
Good thing. That's great. Damn it, you stole one of mine. All right, my next choice is probably going to be the Pink Palace from Coraline.
Ooh.
I'm so glad
think about that
we thought of different things. So I mean, it's in Oregon, which is pretty cool. Coraline's a transplant from Michigan to Oregon, so I feel like I would be kind of the same in that sense. Her house, the house itself, or the like part of the Pink Palace that she lives in, is cool. Like the structure of it and like the different rooms that it has is really cool. But not only that, you have this huge garden, you have Spink and Forcible underneath you who put on, you know, plays when you go across the door, or you can just hang out with a bunch of schnauzers and eat taffy with them. You also have Bobinski above you, who is just, you know, trying to get his jumping mouse circus going. I just feel like it's a lot of fun. There's always a black cat walking around. And if you want to get, you know, want to get freaky with it, you can go through the door and, you know, go see other mother.
Well, frankly, you're a very tall gentleman.
I'll crawl through the door.
I don't see you worrying about it. I think you just leave it alone and enjoy your fucking house.
Yeah, but I just, that world, you know, as long as you don't get enticed and stay there, that world is really cool. Like, it's objectively more fun.
It'd be worth a visit or two at least.
Yes, exactly.
I agree.
And yeah.
Can you handle it and get out of the situation? I guess.
I'd try.
I guess if anyone can handle it, it's probably Steve.
Yeah. Fair. You just got to bring, you got to bring your cat. Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough.
But yeah, the Pink Palace is my second choice. I'm surprised. I definitely thought those two were going to be ones on your list, Sean. So I'm excited to hear what else you got. So hit me with number two.
I'm going to go with Howl's Moving Castle.
Motherfucker, I didn't have that on my list.
It's a good one, right?
What is that? Am I forgetting something?
Ooh, Chelsea, we gotta watch it. So it's a Studio Ghibli movie based on a book. A book which I have right here. One second. I'm gonna grab it.
I'm surprised you haven't seen Howl's Moving Castle.
We should watch it soon.
I have not seen that. I've only seen one or two Studio Ghibli movies.
Howl's is my favorite Ghibli movie.
Okay. It's my second or third. It's in there. It's very, very good. But the book was written by Diana Wynne Jones, and then Studio Ghibli adapted it, and that's, I think, maybe arguably what it's best known for. But this is kind of what it looks like, Chelsea. It's literally a castle.
Oh, cool.
With these almost like Doc Ock kind of feet arms, uh-huh, and it goes about. And yeah, and it's just, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. I guess you kind of have to watch the movie to check it out, but it just roams over like the prairie side. And
that's cool.
And, you know, it's got all sorts of magic stuff in there. Howl lives there and he's a warlock. And even if I had to live with Howl, like, he seems like a nice enough guy.
He's nice enough. Yeah. He's pretty, you know, he has his flaws as a person, but.
We all do. So do I.
You also, we'll figure it out. You also have a flame just in. And what's the word I'm thinking for?
He's like a spirit. He's like a fire spirit in the fireplace.
He's like a fire spirit. But he's voiced by Billy Crystal.
I was gonna say the Billy Crystal flame might get a little bit annoying, but it would be entertaining. But I don't know. He was kind of talking some shit. If I remember, I need to rewatch that movie. Let's go, Charles.
Let's watch it.
We gotta do it.
But Howl's Moving Castle for sure.
That's a great pick. All right, Chelsea, starting off round three, what's your pick?
I think my third pick is going to be Wayne Manor from The Dark Knight, specifically Batman's.
Batcave included?
Yes. Well, the thing about that is I think if I were to purchase Wayne Manor, I don't think the Batcave would be disclosed, but I would know it was there. So I feel like I'd just be spending a lot of time looking for it.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Which would be part of the fun to me.
Yeah.
I mean, who wouldn't want a massive mansion, right? It's huge. I was looking up. I couldn't remember like exactly what it looked like. It's very beautiful. But then in doing that, I remembered that at the end of the third Dark Knight movie, they turn it into an orphanage.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with closing down the orphanage.
I was about to say.
I just want to put it on the record that if I took over Wayne Manor, those kids would be fucking gone.
Orphanage. Yeah.
They have them kids.
They're gonna have to figure it out.
Oh my god. Yeah, that's fair. I feel like I would just go in like to the library, just pulling every book to see which one opens the thing.
I'd be studying Scooby-Doo and taking notes and what are all the things they do to find the secret doors? Like,
yeah,
damn.
Yeah. It would be a massive search.
That's a good one.
Is Alfred included in that as well?
I'd like for him to be. Yeah. Right, yeah. To me, he's part of the home.
If you win Alfred over, I think he'll drop some clues along the way. It might take you a second to fully whatever, but I think if you've got the spunk.
Clues that aren't too giving, too telling, but they'll definitely help me get there.
Right. We still have to have a fun narrative here.
Absolutely.
Alfred riddles. That makes sense. Yep. All right. Damn, I don't really know where to go with this for my third pick. I think I'm going to go with Finn and Jake's Treehouse from Adventure Time.
Nice. I thought about that one.
I think, you know, the treehouse itself, I haven't watched a lot of episodes I can think of that focus fully on the treehouse at all. I mean, like there's episodes that are like bottle episodes where they're just in the episode in the treehouse. But I can't think of any like specifics about the tree itself that are cool besides the fact that it's in, what is it? Ooh, is that where they, what's it called?
The land of Ooh.
When you don't say the land of, it sounds like it's wrong.
But
the land of Ooh. It's just a cool place to live. I feel like I would be adventuring all day and just like enjoying the many creatures and random bullshit that would happen there. And it's also like, who doesn't want to live in a treehouse that's like actually made to be a living space? I feel like that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. Yeah. Realistically, I would just hang out with BMO all day, I think. Like, I think I'd like to tell myself that I would go out and check out all of Ooh. Dude, me and BMO would just be bullshitting nonstop, man.
Bullshitting and blazing.
Straight up. Yeah.
Bullshitting and blazing.
And blazing, dude. Tell me BMO's not a stoner. You're lying. You're lying to me. You're lying.
It would
to yourself.
Be after you got there.
Yeah, exactly. What are you insinuating? Solid pick. Okay, so I'm gonna say this one, and if you think I'm bending too much, go ahead and tell me, and I'll pick something else. Can I live in the giant peach, James and the Giant Peach? Like,
absolutely. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got the, you know, the wraparound and the floating.
It's a dwelling space.
Yes, it is. You know, it's when you said dwelling space. When we, because you prepped me for you breaking rules, maybe. So I jumped to that. Yeah, no, it was just a
I picked the pineapple.
Yeah.
That's exactly. Why I there said it. I said it with SpongeBob in mind. Was gotcha. Like, well, that's not a, I mean, it is a home, but it's a fucking pineapple, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah, it definitely counts.
Yeah, I would love to live, like, literally put me in the middle of the ocean with all of the bug friends and just have us, you know, going about our day. I would struggle because I don't like peach. Like as a food to eat, and that's kind of all that
that's
there
all
is.
It is.
Yeah, but I don't know. Let me figure something out.
I think you'd adjust.
Well, between the what's is her name, like Lady Spider or something? I don't remember her name.
Yeah, I can't remember.
But between her having like her web and me being able to use some peaches bait, I could probably fish something. Like we'll make it work. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's Miss Spider. But how are you going to? How are you going to cook the fish?
All right. So Mr. Cricket, tell me Mr. Cricket doesn't got dry ass legs. All right. You can just and then boom, make some sparks, driftwood somewhere, like something. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. I guess.
I'm just thinking about his legs on fire.
No, it sparks off of it. You know,
this sparks off.
He's a survivalist. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all good.
The flint itself doesn't light on fire. Just the sparks off of it. All right, James's giant peach is what I'm going to call it. That works.
Yeah, that's good.
That's a good one. Damn, I thought I was going to run out of picks, and now I don't know which one to choose. But Chelsea, it's your turn. What's your fourth choice?
Number four, Mamma Mia.
Here we go again.
Which I don't think either of you are super into, right?
I've never seen it. I have no idea. Yeah.
I mean, it's set in Greece. So you've got that right away. Yeah. You're living in Greece. They own a hotel. I can't remember if they live in the hotel or if it's like their home is just connected, but that it's all part of it. So that would be cool. Just like a quaint little hotel for on like a Greek island somewhere. The island they live on is a made up name, I think. I could find out who my real dad is. The way that, you know, I'd really be trying to live out the plot here. I'd be searching for journals. Yeah. I'd be inviting three different men to my home for my wedding. We'll see which one it is.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It also, you'd be singing all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I'm doing that anyway. I might as well put it to use.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's fair.
But also the most important, I mean, the food.
The food. Yep. So, everything about being in Greece is just like.
Yep. Solid choice. Definitely.
Yeah, good. I feel like that's probably the best location out of all of these so far. Mm-hmm.
I know.
All right. Damn. All right. I think my next choice is going to be. Have either of you guys seen Mad Men?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sean hasn't, but Don Draper, John Hamm's character, his apartment in the later seasons of the show,
mm-hmm. In like kind of like almost the 70s style.
It's, so yes, exactly. Yeah. It's like a 70s style apartment. It is like, you know, as nice of an apartment as you can get in New York City. Mm-hmm. It has a great view of the city. It has a talking pit in it, like a conversation pit. That's what they're called. So a really fucking cool conversation pit. Mm-hmm. He's got like, it's just decorated so nicely. It's got a few rooms. It's got a nice kitchen and like a bar counter island area. He's got a record player so that way his girlfriend can sing Zooby Zooby Zoo. Like it's all like exactly the type of apartment I would want if I lived in the 70s. Honestly, I would live in it now.
Me too. I thought of that one as well. It's like a perfect place to live.
Big ass closet, like a walk-in huge closet, like
beautiful.
It's just really fucking nice. Sean, I gotta show you a picture of this. If you haven't watched,
yeah, my favorite part of it.
Yes, the conversation pit's so cool. He's also got a fucking patio thing, mm-hmm. that you can walk out of. But yeah, if anyone listening hasn't watched Mad Men, it's not horror, but it's so fucking good.
Yeah, it's so good.
I also Mad Men's been, you know, on my list for a long time. I will eventually watch Mad Men.
Just so good. But yeah, that's one that I would want specifically just for the aesthetic. But that's my fourth choice. Sean, what about you?
I'm going to go with Whipstaff Manor from Casper. It's where Casper lives. Yep. I am down to take the ghost. I am down to, I'll do Stretch, Fatso, Stinky, and Casper, like that's all good. I'll find Casper's dad's like secret lair that brushes my teeth and tries to shave me and stuff. I'll have to like beat the shit out of that machine to get to the secret room, but you know, no one's shaving me. But other than that, you know, I grew up watching that movie, and that's kind of, I feel like that's the foundation of the kinds of houses that I like, that I truly like, this game aside, want to live in, you know. Mm-hmm. Obviously I doubt I will ever be rich enough to afford a huge manor like that, but a smaller version of that house is kind exactly of what I'm going for. Yeah. I mean, there's a few different aesthetics that I would like, you know, like a witchy, homey sort of vibe is just kind of what I'm going for, but Casper might've been my first love.
That's fair. I haven't watched Casper in so long.
Me either.
And I just bought the physical for it because I saw it and I was like, damn, I want to watch it.
Got that boy on VHS. What are you talking about?
I bet you do.
Yeah. I bet you do. All right. Let's wrap up this fifth round. Chelsea, what's your fifth choice?
Oh shoot. I don't know. My fifth choice, I guess. We do like a...
We'll do honorable picks, mentions, right? If you have, yeah.
I have a couple, yeah. I guess I'll pick the house from Ex Machina.
Damn it. All right, you want to know something? Wow. When we were first thinking of this, I had that in my head and I didn't write it down. And I'm very sad that I forgot about it.
Yeah, that was one of the first ones I thought of too. Oscar Isaac is the main reason because he has to be included. Yeah. And I would be there. Man. Yeah. I would be there in any capacity as his robot servant, as Donald Gleason's character, like,
yeah,
as his helicopter flyer. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Whatever. And it's also, continue.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say it's situated in like, it feels like a rainforest. It's like,
that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
It's one of the only houses that when I think about like the nature aspect of it, I'm into it. Like,
yeah,
normally if it's like, oh, but that one's in the middle of the woods, so I'm not interested. But
right,
this nature is like stunning. And he also, again, has a helicopter to take him away from the nature whenever I want to go be somewhere else. So it's not, I think it's like the perfect setting.
100%.
It is a little like high tech, which normally I'm not super like stoked on in like houses, but as long as I'm not getting like locked away, as long as I have like the, you know, grade A badge, then I think I would be okay with it.
There also still is a sense, because I feel like a lot of the times with like very modern high tech sort of houses, you do like, you lose a nature vibe nature mm-hmm. feel. And you lose a sense of like hominess. And I do think that this house maintains that.
Both yeah. Yeah. Things. Well, it has like in the living areas, there's big windows. Like he has a lot of it's a lot of windows. Yeah. And like he has like a cool staircase. And even the room that Domhnall Gleeson stays in, I can't remember exactly what it is, but like the room does something to like change it from just being a room to like mm-hmm. give like an atmosphere. I don't remember if it changes.
I think one of the screens is like a window or something.
Yeah, maybe that is what it was. Yeah. It's just so, so
good. I will say houses with like entire walls that are windows, like that's just a rookie mistake. Yeah, I never seen When a Stranger Calls. You never seen When a Stranger Calls? Re-up, dude.
If you're in a good spot to not get When a Stranger Called.
These fucking Wendigos out there then. I don't know. Something, dude. You ain't never seen antlers?
It's true. No, it's definitely true.
No, it's a good pick.
All right. Damn, I don't know what I want to pick. I think I'm going to choose this one because it might be Sean's. All right. My last choice is going to be the Dietz house from Beetlejuice.
That was on my list too.
It was also on my list.
All right.
I wasn't sure if I was going to pick it, but yeah.
Me either. I was down to three. Luckily, no one chose one, but except for SpongeBob's pineapple. But yeah, the house itself, like from the outside, it's on like a hill, which has this mm-hmm. cool kind of look to it. So from afar, it's really neat. The structure of the house is cool. The inside decorations wise, if we're talking about like it being decorated post, you know, the two people dying, you have this weird, like kind of like Americana, like decoration. It's just like a really strangely decorated house, but it's so eccentric that I think I would enjoy it. And also, if we're keeping with the mythology of the house, if you die, you can stay in a house and haunt people. So if that's, you know, mm-hmm. I feel like having the opportunity to be in a house and haunt people is fun. Not that they haunt them per se, without
they Beetlejuice try
them, but yeah, but it's they you know try. That would be
yeah.
And I also, do you think Beetlejuice is just there, like do you think well, I have not the ability to talk, because I know he's just a demon, but
yeah. Well, he's I think that Beetlejuice is something that you might have to deal with just from entering the other side in general. Yeah. He's not specifically tied to their home
particularly.
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
But yeah, that's obviously fair. Solid. Could you deal with the sandworms? That seems like a gardening nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think if I'm able to get Beetlejuice on my side, then it's less to worry about. But
he hates them too.
I know, but he can deal with them better than I can.
But working together.
Yeah. You guys both shop at the same store. I guess that's fair.
But yeah, so yeah, God. The Dietz house from Beetlejuice is my fifth choice.
I think I just have like four different movies I'm going to watch today. Oh, man.
All right, Sean, wrap us up.
This is so hard. I do have an honorable mention that I'm going to throw at the end. Okay. I actually have two. Okay. All right. I'm going to go with the Owens house from Practical Magic. And I can hear the screams on the other end of the podcast already. That's witchy aunts included. We're putting the lime in the coconut. All right. We're getting all sorts of silly. And it's funny because I'm listing this and remembering that neither of you have seen this movie.
No.
Correct. I'm looking at the house right now, though. It's beautiful.
Yeah. It's gorgeous. Yeah. The house is gorgeous. There's.
And if it comes with witches.
Yeah, there's
Sandy.
Well, I was good. So, okay. So in the adult world, Sandy's two witch aunts live there.
Okay.
And they seem like a ton of fun. But also, yes, Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman move into the house, and that's just a fucking party. I got big crushes on both of those people. So
how could you not?
Yeah. Yeah. So
and with Nicole Kidman, you know, somehow heartbreak feels good in a place like this.
Oh my fucking God. Heartbreak feels that good in there. A place like this.
Have you guys seen movies since they cut down the time of that?
No.
No.
I'm so grateful to hear that they did.
It's so short now. They've shortened it nice. A lot. And actually,
maybe it was bad and stupid.
Yeah. Sydney and I saw something. I think it was when we saw Licorice Pizza. People clapped because it was it finished like that. And like a third of the audience was clapping. It was very funny.
I don't hate it on its own. I do think it's a very long thing to have at the beginning of every fucking movie. But did you see when they replaced all the movies she was watching with different horror movies? It was very good. It made
I did see that.
When we saw Bernadetta, we were running kind of late, and I said, we're gonna sit down right in time to only, we're gonna miss every trailer, and we are just gonna see Nicole Kidman. And I swear to God, our asses were not in seats for more than 3 fucking seconds. And then there's her foot stepping in the puddle. I was so mad.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Benedetta was so good.
Ugh. Yeah, it was.
I did not see
that movie. Wait, is that all 5? Did we do it?
I think
that
so.
Is all 5. Those are good lists. We had, I was so afraid we were all going to have similar ones.
Yeah,
so.
Dude.
Sean, do you want to go ahead with some honorable mentions if you have
Yes. So I have two. First, I'm going to say the Flowers in the Attic house from the V.C. Andrews cover, mainly because I just truly think that I would look beautiful looking out of that window.
You were made for that window.
100%. I grew up, I just made a video about this recently, but I grew up, like, my mom had those books lying around all the time, and I was so fascinated by those covers because the covers are always like, it'll be the house, and then in the cover of the book, there's a hole where the window is, and that's like where the girl is looking out of, and then you open it, and it's like the girl and whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, that's such a cool thing. And she did that with like all of her books. So
you want to be that girl.
That's And to be honest, I've never read them. I have no clue what that story is. I'm pretty sure it's fairly, I mean, it's a horror series. I'm pretty sure.
I think they're a little fucked.
Yeah, I think they're a little fucked is an understatement, but like aesthetically, at least with the knowledge that I have, I'm about it. I think
House looks good.
Nothing about it at all.
No?
No. Nope.
I'll send you a picture. But okay, so the other one, I'm shocked none of us took this. I'm shocked I didn't take it. But the Addams Family home, the Addams Family estate.
Oh. Yeah. I didn't even think of it, but yes.
Not me either.
Complete with everybody. And I almost picked it, but I just figured it was a little similar to the other ones I was picking. And I kind of wanted to give someone else an opportunity to take it because I felt confident in what was going on. But yeah. Also, I'm talking the original one. I would happily take the one from the late 90s, like early 2000, or it's early 90s that movie came out.
Yes, early 90s.
But I would happily take that one, but I really want the one from the show. That house is like pink.
That's one
like,
I would pick too.
The inside of that house is like pink and
strange colors.
Yeah. And I'd love it.
Yeah. So. Very cool.
Chelsea, do you have any honorable mentions?
Yeah. Would I have been allowed to have pick the house from The Bachelorette? Count.
I would count it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful mansion in sunny California, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I lived there, I'd be hosting my own show. Well, yeah, I would be the Bachelorette.
If I'm there, then I need to do this.
Right. I would be the Bachelorette. Sean would be the host.
There you go.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I'll take that gig.
Yeah.
That's a good.
I'm down.
It's a good casting.
And then I also thought of Drake and Josh, but specifically for the bedroom.
Their room.
Drake and, I always thought their room was so cool. That was like my ideal setting as a child. So I had a little bit of nostalgia for that room.
That kind of goes into, I have 3 left. So that goes into iCarly apartment.
Nice.
Is one that I thought of.
Very good.
They're in the North.
Telling you Northwest. Just how I feel.
Yeah, Pacific Northwest. They have this like studio space above. I don't even think you get to see what their bedroom's like, but their living room and elevator and staircase, like all that shit, by itself is really cool. The McAllister house from Home Alone.
I thought of that one too.
Maybe the like nicest house from a movie. That's just
what the
house.
Fuck did that dad do for a living?
I'd have no idea. Literally no idea, but enough to fly his kids to Paris and wherever else the fuck they went. And that actually just made me think of another house. Sean, you haven't seen The Proposal, but Chelsea, have you seen The Proposal?
Is that with Sandra Bullock?
Yeah.
Sandy Bullock.
Yeah, I think I've seen it.
So they go to this house. It's basically a mansion on like the waterfront in Alaska. And it's just another like beautiful house that just made me think of. But my last one is The House from Parasite.
I almost said that one too.
Yeah. It's just like, it's like almost Ex Machina level, not Ex Machina level techie, but it's very a techie house, but it's just gorgeous. Like a big part of that film is like the architecture of the house. And they have this huge, you know, beautiful front lawn that you can camp out in or play out in or whatever you want. They have a little bit of basement space as well. And they just
we're living in trying times. It'd be nice to have a bomb shelter.
Absolutely. But yeah,
and I think I'm vindictive enough to want the option to lock someone away if necessary.
No spoilers, please. Still have
Sean hasn't seen Parasite.
Oh, gotcha. I didn't know you hadn't seen it.
No, it's all good.
That's not spoiling nothing.
I have no context for anything, so it's all good.
Okay.
That would be my last honorable mention. This is a good list. I'm glad that we played this game. Yeah. We need to think of a game for our next interview. If you're listening to this, thanks as always for listening. Sean and I are very lucky and are lining up a bunch of interviews, so we got great things coming on the way.
I want to tease so bad, but we won't.
I just don't want like a series of unfortunate events to happen and us not get the interviews, you know what
I mean?
That would be really bad. So we won't tease anything, but as always, thank you guys for listening. Follow us on Twitter at Mostly Horror, on Instagram at Mostly Horror Movie Night. Shoot us a DM or a tweet or talk to us, and we will see you guys next week. Goodbye.
If you like Mostly Horror, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcast.
Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run dark. In this new crime thriller, religion and crime collide when this small Montana community is rocked by a gruesome murder. As the town is whipped into a frenzy, everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager. But local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Lauro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. She and Ruth form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone's watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy Award nominee Sana Leighton and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook plunges listeners into the dark underbelly of a small town where the lines between truth and deception are blurred, and even the most devout are not who they seem. Chinook is available to listen to now exclusively with your Wondery Plus subscription. You can subscribe to Wondery Plus on the Wondery app, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify.